Good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Mitchell Sell, S-E-L-L, under the supervision of Ms. Carolyn Wilson, appearing on behalf of the appellant. Your Honors, in a speedy trial case, the burden is on the state. The state has to prove, by preponderance of the evidence, that certain periods of time are excludable from calculation of the speedy trial clock. They're unable to do that in today's case. Your Honors, before I get to the state's two continuances, I would like to briefly address the pretrial continuance that Mr. LaVorne asked for. Your Honors, this period of time, the pretrial continuance that Mr. LaVorne asked for, should be excluded from the speedy trial clock because it's not within a plain reading statute. If you turn to 29-1207, subsection 4, it says the following periods shall be excluded in computing time for trial. That's the key. Trial. If you go to subparts A and B, then they both start off with the period of delay. Your Honors, here there was no period of delay because we already had a trial date set. The trial date set was June 14th. We had a pretrial come up on April 9th. At the April 9th pretrial, Mr. LaVorne continued that pretrial up until June 11th.
Hasn't this court previously held that continuances of pretrial hearings and count excludable time?
Your Honor, there are certain limited circumstances where they can. I believe you're referring to State v. Bridgeford, where the court did hold that continuance of pretrial conferences are excludable. However, I would respectfully suggest that that was in dicta, as in that case, there actually was no pretrial continuance. This seemed to be just in a summary paragraph of the case.
Bridgeford, Williams, Court of Appeals case, and Craven, don't all those cases recognize that continuance of a pretrial?
They do, Your Honor, but I would suggest that each is distinguishable. I'll go through the three that were cited by Bridgeford. The first was Wealth. This was a case decided by this court. But in that case, the continuance of the pretrial actually caused the trial date to be continued as well. That's not the case here. In Craven, a court by the Nebraska Court of Appeals, there was a pretrial continuance, but the court ended up deciding that on other grounds because the motion for the continuance was not filed by an attorney, but filed by the attorney's staff. So that was, that's not applicable to today's case as well. Lastly, State v. Daly, another appellate court case. In this one, there was a pretrial continuance that was held excludable, but Your Honor, in that case, there was no trial date yet set. Whereas here, we have a trial date set that was not pushed back. In Daly, if there's no trial date set yet, the continuance of the pretrial necessarily pushed back the trial date, and that's not the case we have here.
Who requested the continuance on the pretrial?
Mr. LaVorne requested a continuance of the pretrial hearing that did not continue the actual trial date that was already set. Your Honors, because it didn't continue the actual trial date, it's not within the plain meaning of the statute, and there's no. Your Honors, we'll then turn to the two continuances by the state. The first continuance the state asked for was on June 11th, and that continued the June 14th date up until July 17th. Mr. LaVorne is not objecting to this because it was due to unavailability of a witness. Your Honors, what we're really here to talk about today is the second continuance that the state asked for. And this second continuance was for an indefinite period of time. Now, it was purported by the state to, again, be due to unavailability of a witness. But, Your Honors, that was not the case. This case is really going to turn on whether you believe the state that it was due to unavailability of a witness or it wasn't. And I offer you three reasons why this continuance was not due to unavailability of the witness. Your Honors, the first is because the continuance was indefinite. The court did not set a period of time. If the court knew that there was going to be a witness unavailable, they would have set a period of time, just like they did at the first continuance.
Didn't this case get transferred to another judge?
It did, Your Honor, yes.
How would the first judge didn't know what the second judge's availability was?
That is possible, Your Honor, but then that would go towards, well, is the reason really because we're moving the docket, or is it because the witness was unavailable? And if the state wants to assert that this was due to changing a docket, that has not been recognized as a valid exception, because under the statute, it's not brought by the defendant, it's not due to unavailability of a witness, and it's not due to good cause. And again, the burden's on the state here. The state has to show that this period of time is excludable.
Do you think the state's representation is we seek a delay because of unavailability of a witness until we don't know when?
Yeah, the state wanted a continuance until the witness was available. But another problem here is, on the record, we don't know when that witness was going.
Did the state make any representation?
The state...
About the potential timing of the availability of the witness?
Yes, Your Honor, the state asserted in an affidavit by the county attorney that the witness would be unavailable for a period of approximately 3 weeks, but never asserted when that 3 weeks fell or when the trial date was going to be within that 3 weeks. And that's another problem, going to my second point, why this was not truly due to unavailability of witness, because the judge did not inquire as to the unavailability. In the first continuance, on the record, in the Bill of Exceptions, page 7 and 8, you have a discussion between the county attorney and the judge about when the witness will be available. And in fact, the judge takes it under advisement because he wants to verify that. When we go to the second continuance, where you have the issue today, there was no discussion on the record in the Bill of Exceptions on page 9 and 10. No explanation offered by the county attorney, and the judge does not even take it under advisement, just grants it. And that's, again, that shows this really wasn't due to unavailability of a witness. That was just pretext for this judicial continuance.
What evidence, I guess you're trying to tell us that, do you have that it was pretext?
Your Honor, to that I direct you to the third point I was going to address anyways, is comments by Judge Cox after it was transferred to his docket. In the Bill of Exceptions on page 14, on August 30th, Judge Cox remarks, the court doesn't believe we can take it off the calendar without some type, either a good cause finding or waiver by the defendant. I think we are up against our 6 months. Your Honors, that shows even Judge Cox knew that this wasn't due to unavailability of a witness. Because if it does, as the state asserts in the state's brief, then they would have had until December 20th to try Mr. LaVorn. But they knew that wasn't the case because they knew they were up against the clock even as of August 30th. Your Honors, these three reasons, that's why this was not due to unavailability of a witness. And then we go into, well, is the judicial transfer, is that enough? The state incorrectly relies here on State v. Carrera. In that case, the court held that a delay between, switching between judicial dockets is excludable. But that's distinguishable here because the delay there was on the defendant's motion. So it fell within sections A or B of the statute. Because the defendant brought the motion, the defendant necessarily waives any delay to trial at that point. Here, we have an indefinite continuance by the state, which, Your Honor, I could not find any case law addressing an indefinite continuance by the state, because that the notion that the state could continue someone's trial indefinitely is so offensive to the justice system and to the Constitution, a defendant's speedy trial right, if he doesn't have any idea when his trial will take place. Your Honor, instead, I would direct you towards State v. Wilcox. There's helpful discussion in that case between whether a case is lying dormant or if it's under advisement. This court held in Wilcox that a court cannot table a motion and thereby suspend the defendant's rights where judicial delay otherwise would warrant discharge of the offense charge. Your Honor, that's exactly what we have in this case. We have a court that tabled the motion and nobody knew what was going on. And so you have the competing arguments of, is it really due to a witness's unavailability or is it due to this institution neglect? And it doesn't matter if it's oversight or if it was intentional. Again, the burden is on the state. The state, the prosecution, the court has the burden first of taking the defendant to trial within the time allotted by the statute and the Constitution. With that, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Ms. Faust, good morning to you.
Representing that, I believe, the state of Nebraska. Warren assigns and argues that the district court heard an overruling on both statutory and trial grounds of state, obviously, in both respects. I will start with the excludable trades in this case. There are three excludable periods in this case. The first one is excludable for the continuance of the trial hearing to the next pretrial hearing. The second and third excludable periods fall under 4C(i) due to the state's two motions to continue. Two periods elapsed, resulting in time from the day after the district court's first continuance, the day the state's second continuance ended. Today, the state's continuance was not definite, as Mr. Sell argues today. That language is defendant's continuance. For state's requested continuance, under that statute section, they only have to show that it's a material necessary witness won't be for the scheduled trial dates, for what reason, and when they will be again. Both of the state's motions for continuance had affidavits attached, and as I understand it, he's only disputing the state's second motion, which that affidavit was from the prosecutor that said it's necessary. Hobbs be unavailable by 17th trial date. That was because she was going down for a work trip and be available after that 3 weeks when she got back.
The date, in your view, then, the dates are certain enough. Does 3 weeks commence?
Yeah, the state met its burden of proof. Why was she going to be gone, and when was she back? And when the state files for a continuance, defendant files for a continuance, it's a rescheduling matter. So courts have to take into account their own calendars, the parties' calendars. You are not going to trial the next day when the witness comes.
When a continuance is granted, what does our precedent say about how much time is it?
And the date was a rescheduled trial date of September.
Not when the witness.
I understand that they're making an argument because a period of time that would necessarily need analyzed under F in the case. All the subject F that we for F if a period of time trial statute would by a continuance by the state in case law that the time ends. In his brief, LaVorn also argues that the district never advised him of his right to trial and failed to determine voluntarily intelligently waived his right to speedy trial. The state's response to that argument is he didn't waive his right to speedy trial, so there was no cause for the district to advise him of his right to speedy trial. Time ended the trial. He never. And as for his actors favor.
Could you address the argument on continuance requested by the argument made today that pretrial continuance would not result in exclusive time if it doesn't result in
the state's response is a continuance does not have to extend the trial date in order. Trial statute says nothing about a period of time needing a trial date. The point of the speedy trial statute is that 6 months trial. Any of that 6 months is by the defendant back. If a defendant files some sort of and if this court would adopt LaVorn's if a trial court sets the matter for trial and say the defendant files a motion A, and it's resolved before trial, not count that? Do we not exclude that? Yes, we exclude that. That is what is contemplated by the speedy trial. I'd like to make one note. I did not cite my brief. Necessarily has the same facts or the same, based on the argument that the defendant's first pretrial conference continuance in that case did overlap with his motion to continue, and so that time was excluded because of the latter, and his second pretrial conference continuance that there was a trial date set, and his argument is that matters. I don't think it does, as I previously stated, but I would submit at this time that I do expect, this court stated in Bridgeport, trial conferences are original date of the pretrial conference date, and I think that that's incorrect. I think it conflicts with the facts that after the granted ends, and the way that this court calculates other continuance. I don't think it goes from the pretrial hearing date to the new pretrial hearing. Someone requests a continuance pretrial hearing and is granted before that first pretrial date, that day we don't go from the day after it's granted, the next, the second pretrial date. That's when the
So you're not quarreling with the ending date in Bridgeport, only the beginning?
Beginning, right. Yes. Trying to do that for a while, and now I've had that opportunity. There are no further questions. We ask you from the judge of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? 1 minute and 13 seconds. Mr. Sell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, the state asserts that when a continuance falls within one of the enumerated exceptions, that you don't have to consider any judicial management or mismanagement. That's not the case here. This continuance did not fall within any of the other statutory exceptions. Like I mentioned, it's your job to figure out, does this fall within the unavailability of a witness, or is it because of institutional neglect, whether it's intentional or simply an oversight? When the state transferred, when the court transferred that case to the other docket, there's no principled reason for them to move it to the docket and result in an indefinite continuance. Indefinite because the date wasn't set. It's not indefinite because the court said it was indefinite. But if they know the witness was going to be available in 3 weeks, why didn't they set a new trial date just like they did the first time?
What's our standard of review?
Standard review for factual issues is clear error. And on the interpretation of the statute, the speedy trial statute would be de novo. Your Honors, this is de novo because we have to figure out, is this judicial transfer of a docket, is that within the statute? The state had that burden today, and they did not prove to you that it was within the statute. Your Honor, I'm out of time. May I offer a prayer?
You may.
Your Honors, because of the foregoing reasons, Mr. LaVorn asks you to adopt a rule that an indefinite continuance by the state is in disharmony with the statute and the Constitution. I ask you to overrule the district court and grant his motion. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. The next case of the day is State versus Privet.